Good morning. The Joint Committee on Tax Credits will come to order. We will go ahead and get started and be joined by folks as they come in. And I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on all of the bills that we have before us today to make the order a little bit easier. So we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3170A, Senate Bill 689, Senate Bill 320A, Senate Bill 620, Senate Bill 319A, and Senate Bill 691. And colleagues, you will note that House Bill 3170A and Senate Bill 319A are essentially twin bills. So we're going to go ahead and probably hear about those bills first. And we'll be joined soon by one of our Senate colleagues to talk about the rest of those Senate bills. So with that, I would like to call up a panel of Bob Russell, Ralph Groner, and Greg Aldrich to talk about 3170 and 319 and anything else your heart desires. Gentlemen.
Good morning, Co-Chair Bailey and members of the committees. My name is Greg Aldrich with the Department of Environmental Quality, and I'm here today to provide information on House Bill 3170 and Senate Bill 319, two tax credit bills that reduce diesel emissions and protect the public health. We have submitted responses to the questions requested by your committee, and I will try to highlight the most important information in my testimony and point out the differences between the two bills. Diesel engines produce an exhaust mixture of gases and fine particulates that contribute to environmental and public health concerns like increased risk of cancer, cardiovascular disease, and respiratory disorders like asthma and bronchitis. 95% of Oregonians are exposed to diesel emissions above the health benchmark and would benefit from tax credit reductions. In response to the health risks from diesel emissions, the 2007 legislature directed the Environmental Quality Commission to adopt a goal to reduce cancer risk from diesel exposure to 1 in 1 million by the year 2017. Achieving the goal will require a reduction of slightly over 1,400 tons of particulates over time. Since 2007, we have achieved about 30 tons per year in reductions from tax credits and federal grants. DEQ processes tax credits for all of the diesel tax programs. The amended version of House Bill 3170 ends the new truck engine tax credit by the end of this biennium, while Senate Bill 319 lets the truck engine tax credit expire at the end of this year. So that's one of the two differences between the bills. Both bills extend the repower retrofit tax credits. House Bill 31 extends the credits through 2013, while 319 extends the credits to the year 2017. And here's a little more on the details about the repower and retrofit tax credits, since those are the two that are being considered for continuation. Both provide a direct financial incentive to truck owners to update from old polluting engines to cleaner engines. Both reduce diesel emissions and health impacts. And both of these tax credits require 50% usage in Oregon for at least 3 subsequent years, and the project must also meet a cost-effectiveness test. Repower means replacing an older, higher polluting engine with less polluting, new, used, or a remanufactured engine. Tax credits can be issued for up to 25% of the cost of the repowered engine. The credit is limited to non-road engines and requires scrapping of the old engine, as it cannot be used for anything but scrap metal. Non-road engines include construction, logging, agricultural, and marine vessel engines as examples. Equipment owners considering repowering are not required to purchase an engine cleaner than the one removed, so the tax credit serves as an incentive to incur the cost for a newer engine that is also lower emitting in diesel particulates. The other tax credit, retrofit, means to upgrade currently operating diesel engines with new advanced control exhaust controls to reduce the most harmful pollutants with the greatest impact to public health and the environment. While retrofitting delivers great benefits to the environment, we've only issued one tax credit for a retrofit project because retrofitting requires someone to spend extra money for the equipment and requires additional maintenance on that equipment. So this is truly an incentive to go above and beyond existing requirements. DEQ may certify a maximum of $3 million in repower and retrofit tax credits in any one calendar year. To date, the amount of credits issued has been significantly less. For this biennium, we expect to certify tax credits of up to $1.3 million for 9 engines, most of which are repowers of large towbow engines on the Columbia River. We would expect similar demand in subsequent years if either bill is approved. To summarize, the tax credits are one of several strategies to reduce diesel emissions and meet the 2017 goal of reducing cancer-related health risks. We also rely on federal grants to finance projects and outreach to a variety of diesel engine users to reduce emissions. The retrofit and repower tax credits can also be used to help applicants from Oregon secure competitive federal grants. Tax credit service part of the applicant's contribution or match to the project increases the chances for awards to Oregon projects. While this tax credit benefits the general public as a result of reduced diesel emissions, it financially benefits owners of highway and non-highway diesel-powered equipment and the 11 Oregon-based dealers who offer engine repowering services and the 10 Oregon-based dealers who offer exhaust control retrofitting products and services. And to end, obviously the one question before this committee is which decision, if you decide to pick one of the bills, which sunset bill, there's sunset date to choose, whether it's the one at the end of 2013 or the one at the end of 2017. Thank you very much for your time, and I'm open to questions probably once we're all done.
Mr. Co-Chair. Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. As you have been told, we've got two tax credits on the table, and maybe I can help clarify a little bit what we're doing here. If you look at House Bill 3170, sections 1 through 3 deals with what's referred to as the new engine tax credit. That tax credit was initially enacted in 2003. And the idea was, as the Environmental Protection Agency required the trucking industry to adopt cleaner burning engines, that we would provide an incentive for us to do so as quickly as possible. So we had a new engine version in 2004 that dropped NOx about 85%. In 2007, we had a new engine version that dropped particulates by 95%. And then in 2010, we had our final version of the new engines, which again dropped NOx, so it has now also been reduced by about 95%. That's the last version of the EPA requirements today. So the 2010 engines were sort of the last of the series of what we were trying to incent. With House Bill 3170, what we're doing with that tax credit is we're saying that you cannot apply for that tax credit after June 30th, 2011, and that's on page 2, line 17. So that's the tax credit that would go away. That's the one that benefits the trucking industry, and we believe that there is no longer any reason to continue that tax credit. The second tax credit is referred to as the Clean Diesel Tax Credit. That program was implemented in 2007, and that covers a much broader array of diesel engines. It's not limited to trucking. Matter of fact, there has only been one truck that has been retrofit under that particular program, and that was a demonstration truck that was owned by Cascade Sierra Solutions. So, as Greg said, these tax credits under this particular program have been used primarily to repower tugboats. and we would expect that that would continue. We would also expect that we would get involved in school buses. That was one of the original intents of the Clean Diesel Program, although there hasn't, my understanding is there hasn't been much activity in the school bus area to date. But we would hope that that happens. What 3119 does, it is also addresses the Clean Diesel Program. The difference is the sunset date. In 3170, you've got a sunset date of January 1 of 2014, which is on page 2, line 22. In 319, you've got a sunset date of January 1, 2018. So the policy decision is which sunset date you want for the Clean Diesel Program. And certainly we are advocating that you eliminate the new engine tax credit this session so that that would go away June 30th of 2011. We have another motive, obviously, for asking for you to eliminate the new engine tax credit. We are, in lieu of that tax credit, we are asking for a one-time appropriation to create a revolving loan fund to pay the tuition for people that want to become truck drivers. Prior to the recession, we had a tremendous shortage of truck drivers in this state and across the nation. When the recession hit, of course, that sort of dried up. But during that period of time, we developed a statewide program in partnership with the community colleges to train new truck drivers. What we need to make that successful is a revolving loan fund. It would be a one-time appropriation to help pay the tuition for these folks that will create the jobs and will also allow the trucking industry to keep Oregon's freight moving. That proposal is currently down in Ways and Means, and certainly is not the something that we're asking this committee to do, but I just wanted to make you aware of what the proposal that's on the table. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Okay. Mr. Groner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing AFSCME. I asked Bob if I could be a truck driver because I always wanted to be, and he said because I'm deaf and half blind and old, I couldn't even apply. So I feel that I finally had a shot. I want to testify regarding diesel pollution. Just so I clarify, AFSCME represents the healthcare industry, particularly OHSU, eight or nine other hospitals, public health throughout Oregon, and the efforts of have been made, haven't been mentioned here, between Metro and DEQ, both my locals. The fact is, on the tipping fee, meaning your garbage fee in the Metro area, we're currently working to make all garbage trucks diesel-free, retrofitting. That will reduce diesel pollution in the Portland Metro area by 10%. OHSU was the first hospital in America to become a diesel-free hospital. Means that if you don't have a clean truck or if it's coming on that facility site, it won't be allowed. And school buses, Bob mentioned, we got started in this because of school buses. I can only comment that that needs to go forward. Those of you who are new to this, the fact is we have some school buses in this state with open cranks where the pollution coming into those buses, if you're in them for long drives in rural Oregon, is much higher risk for the three kinds of things Greg talked about, cardiovascular, cancer. However, Senator Bates testified on these issues. The largest rise due to pollution of diesel is in children and asthma. It's extraordinary, the increase we've having. My testimony is to look at the whole picture more from a health issue, and I'm still there. It's been one of my priorities since I served here, and I guess I'm not gaining a lot of ground. So I guess my suggestion is this is costing this state innumerable amount of dollars in health care costs that are coming from tax dollars to our health programs, and I really would hope, rather than just say we're going to do away with or we're going to not do anything in the future on diesel, that's your choice, that's a tax choice. I would hope you'd send this to the appropriate committee to say we want you to begin looking at what diesel pollution is doing to Oregonians' health, what's the cost, and report back. Since you already have a committee working on that. This is a bit more serious. I right now have a same report you just heard. Currently, over 95% of Oregonians live in areas that exceed the Oregon Health benchmark for diesel pollution. Those were established some years ago. We have decreased since 07, approximately, I think it was 30 tons of diesel pollution. And EPA contends that that cost is $720,000 per ton. And the fact is that we have been doing a minimal job. Your neighbors to the north and south deal with this differently. They have grants, write out grants for this. One of my problems is that you have no money, and I'm well aware of that because of my other locals. However, I would say that looking at their programs would make some sense, just if even though you're relatively, there's a good word, impecunious right now. I don't know where that came from, somewhere back to before I had diesel pollution in my brain. But I would suggest to you that I would hope that this is more than a credit. This is a very costly, costly health issue in Oregon. If you look at what diesel pollution does to our society, especially people close to a freeway with the new apartments, that are where children live, and that's 1,000 times greater. That testimony didn't come out here, but it has throughout the years. That's 1,000 times greater to the people living close to freeways, in particular, I'm talking urban areas where you have that kind of pollution. So I would hope you would look at this as a bigger picture, not just a tax issue, and understand that this is a cost driver to the health system, and me and my health care and my universities and my doctors and my nurses and our support staff would hope in public health that we would look at diesel pollution as a very serious problem, as your neighbors have to the north and south, and begin doing some realistic discussion of how we're going to deal with it. With that, I closed and open for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Groner. We appreciate the larger lesson and the expansion of our vocabulary. questions for this panel. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What percentage of the total truck pollution would be eliminated if this bill were to continue? This tax credit.
Mr. Co-Chair, Madam
the total pollution load. Madam, this tax credit continues. What percent reduction?
Co-Chair, Senator Morse. By eliminating the new engine tax credit, that's what deals with trucks. So, as you know, our new engines. One of the things that I often say when I'm before committees is the exhaust from a new 2010 diesel truck engine is cleaner than the air in downtown Portland, and we're going to start routing the exhaust into the cab of the truck to improve the health of our drivers. So that's the truck piece. The clean diesel program really does not have anything to do with trucks. It has to do with other diesel engines, school buses, towboats, diesel engines in the construction industry, those kinds of things. So extending that, the clean diesel tax credit will really not have an impact on trucks, but it certainly will have an impact on pollution from diesel engines. And the engines that are targeted by that tax credit have not gone through the same process of cleaning up the emissions that our engines have.
And I guess if I might rephrase my question, then in that context, what percentage of the total pollution would be reduced if you extended that tax credit to the non-truck engine?
Mr. Co-Chair and Senator Morse, the goal that was set in the 2007 legislature was to reduce to a cancer risk of 1 in 1 million. So it's one way of looking at it. To do that, we would have to remove 1,400 tons total. Right now, we've removed about 100 tons in the last 3.5 years. So there's, you know, quite a bit of reduction that has to occur yet. I'd say 1,300 tons to get to that cancer risk. And that's what I would say would be a success in terms of measuring that reduction. If, I don't know if that helps you.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Bob, Senator?
Well, if we're going to do this, is the effect de minimis or is it significant? That's my question. So
if I might, it's one of the tools we have. It's obviously, we have a big gap to fill. We have the tax credit as one part of that, and we have federal grant dollars that are coming in that also help, and both are part of the package that we can offer to help reduce the risk from diesel pollution. No, it's not going to be the one item that's going to get us there. It's just one of the components that helps get us there as an incentive.
Catcher Berger.
Yes, would you repeat those numbers, if you wouldn't mind, that you said in the 07 bill, the goal was how many and how far have we gotten towards that goal?
The Mr. Co-Chair and Madam Co-Chair, the goal from 2007 was to reduce the cancer risk from diesel engines to 1 in 1 million by 2017. We've calculated that represents a reduction of 1,400 tons of particulates over that time frame. We've been averaging 30 tons per year in reduction, so assuming we've gotten to about 100 tons, that means there's a 1,300-ton gap, which means there's a lot more that has to occur in the next few years if we were to reach that goal by 2017.
Well,
and was that the stated goal of this particular program, or was that a goal that encompassed a number of different efforts?
Madam Co-Chair, this is one of many. So the grant program was another big part of it, too.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why are we having trouble, why are we having trouble getting school buses retrofitted? I mean, the arguments that you made make very, very good sense to me. And what's the problem? Well, why are this and other programs not working?
I don't have an answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I asked the staff person, since that's my local DEQ, who personally works on this program, that question. Thank you for asking it. He said, Ralph, there's because I really, and we all care, we had a committee working to get this done. There's been a reluctance, is all he said, very quietly by some school districts to accommodate this program. If you want further discussion of that issue rather than me, I suggest the schools and the staff who work on this program come in front of whomever you'd like to and ask that same question, and thank you for asking it. By the way, I wanted to add something. When we talk about federal grants, my understanding is the proposed appropriation for this in the federal budget for fiscal year 2011, I'm going by notes, is reduced by 20% from previous years, and I need you to know that it is zeroed out in fiscal year 2012 budget from a Fed. So we're facing problems in Oregon in terms of health control dealt with diesel, but also federal matching funds.
And if I could, Co-Chair and Representative Barnhart, I'd be glad to get information for you about what information we have on schools and why they're not using it. Be glad to bring that back to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? I have a question. It seems to me that part of the policy trade-off here to get at the goals that you stated, Mr. Aldrich, is the trade-off in efficiency and effectiveness for different methods that we might choose, whether that is a tax credit, whether that is a pollution standard or regulation, whether that is another tool that's out there. I'm not as familiar with the federal regulations as I ought to be, but my understanding is there has been a significant tightening around diesel engines. Can you speak to the applicability of changes in diesel emission standards over the last, say, decade or so? Do those apply beyond trucks and passenger vehicles? Do those apply to, say, tugboat engines and the other things that these retrofits are used for?
Mr. Co-Chair, my understanding is it applies mainly to the truck engines, but when you get to the off-road engines, there's been a lot less control regulation in place. And of course, those need to be done at the national level. Often the states are preempted from doing that. So from a state perspective, it's often based on incentives and using tax credits here in Oregon or using grants to enhance someone or encourage someone to go above and beyond. And I know our success stories have been with towboat operators on the Columbia River Gorge, where you have these big old engines and they're willing to take that risk and upgrade them and really reduce the amount of emissions that come out of those heavily used engines that are going up and down the Columbia River.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I want to add to that, if you don't mind, is once because diesel engines have been so wonderfully lasting long, you're looking at 30 years and longer, the Clean Air Act, when it passed, excluded construction or non-moving equipment. So when you pass that equipment, when there's construction work, one, it's probably old, but it did not include it. And quite frankly, if you ask my staff, the number one polluter is really not his trucks or any of the others. It's construction equipment, because they were not required as the trucking industry to phase in the new much reduced polluting trucks engines, but not construction. So I want you to know that that's a major issue that needs to be dealt with, because their pollution is much greater than is coming out of buses, trucks, etc.
Thank you, gentlemen. And Mr. Russell, I appreciate your engagement on this issue. I think part of the reason that we decided to dive into these tax credits in such detail and to have a committee such as this was to get some of the dust off, take a look at them, and see whether or not they were still relevant or useful, or what alternative methods might be better for achieving a specific goal. And I appreciate your work on digging into that.
Thank you.
We have one more person signed up to testify on this issue in particular, but we are pleased to be joined by one of our colleagues. I'm going to call up Senator Dingfelder. And, Senator, we have opened a public hearing on all of the bills that came out of your committee, save one that we didn't have in time. And I'm hoping that, in addition to speaking to the specifics of the bill, that you could give us an overview of the process that you went through in your committee and how you went about your ranking.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and co-chairs and committee members. I'm Senator Jackie Dingfelder, District 23, Northeast, Southeast Portland. And I wanted to provide an overview of the review process that came out of my committee, and Senator Haas was part of that, so there's a little bit of overlap on this committee, which I think is a good thing. So many of you know that this is the first time that these tax credits have had more of a scrutiny than in the past. It was very interesting reviewing the information from the past tax expenditure reports, because that is basically the only information that we've had from the agencies about the effectiveness of these tax credits from the past. And as you know, that type of analysis was not very detailed. One of the things that we found is there wasn't a lot of metrics on the consistency and the history of these tax credits. So in a way, I don't want to say we were starting from square one, but this is the first time, at least in the decade that I've been in this building, that we've truly done a full scrutiny of these tax credits, and I think that's a good thing. I'm hoping that you have seen this sheet that was provided to us by your committee, and on the front it was questions for policy committees, so I want to let you know that every single one of the tax credits that's before you, we followed this outline, which I found to be very helpful, and we asked the agencies who had oversight authority for these tax credits to provide information to answer all these policy questions. And then on the back side of the page, I just want to quickly walk through the process that my committee went through in order to review these tax credits.
Senator, I'm going to pause you for one moment. The document that you have there has the questions from this committee on the front and then answers on the back?
Not just answers. It basically is more detail. Hopefully you all had a copy of it. It's from your committee.
I'm not sure that we have that in our packets.
Well, I'll just walk you through real quickly the most salient questions, which was, first, we were asked to review the goal or purpose of the credit, which our committee did. Then we were asked to evaluate the effectiveness of the credit in achieving the goal. Next, we were asked to consider new credits for achieving policy goals, and we did that on one instance, which I can explain to you. And then we decided on what action to take, a simple extension, refer the bill to your committee. Some of those we did. An extension with modifications, which amended the bill and then referred it to your committee. Some of that we did. Allowed credit to sunset, would take no action on the bill. Some of that we did, and I'll walk through each one. And then replace existing credit with a more effective tax credit, and that we did as well. So what I'd like to do, Mr. Co-Chair, if it's okay, is just walk through each one of them with a little bit of detail and then take questions from the committee members.
That would be great, although, Senator, I should make sure that we're clear that, unfortunately, we did not receive Senate Bill 688 in time to post for today, so we technically have not opened a public hearing on that bill, but
okay.
The rest have a public
hearing. And I'm happy to come back on Thursday. I know that Representative Cannon, my understanding, is going to be here to testify as well, and both of our committees, we work jointly on the RETC, so on 688, so I'm happy to come back. I can talk a little bit about the process.
That would be fantastic.
If that would be helpful. And I have handed out a chart, which I can talk about. So actually, I think what I'll do is save the 688 for last and talk more about the process on that. We were also asked to rank the tax credits in order of importance, and hopefully you received that ranking. And actually, 688 was ranked number one. For a number of reasons, which I'll talk more about later. But each of these, we did spend quite a bit of time. We had multiple hearings on some of the tax credits. I have a feeling that many of the same people are sitting behind me right now that you'll hear from as well. But hopefully we were able to answer many of the questions to truly address the policy ramifications of these tax credits. So as you can see, I'm hoping that the ranking was forwarded to you, and we did rank the RETC is number one, Senate Bill 688. We ranked Senate Bill 689 as number two. Senate Bill 320 is number three. 620 is number four. 319 is number five. And 691 is number six. And one of them dropped off the list, which I'll talk about. One other thing I'd like to mention is I met with each of my committee members separately. One of the realities is it's hard to have a very in-depth discussion in a work session. And so I wanted to make sure and hear the inputs of each of my committee members. So I had an individual meeting with each of those to discuss their questions, concerns, and ranking for each of these tax credits. So I will start with Senate Bill 689, since you have a hearing open on the rest of these. That is the fish screening bill. Currently, a credit against personal and corporation income tax is allowed for installing a fish screening device, bypass device, or fishway, except where the device is part of a federally regulated hydroelectric project. These devices protect fish from being diverted out of the stream or having their migration blocked at water diversions while still allowing water use to divert and use their allotment of water. So Senate Bill 689 extends the sunset of the fish screen tax credit from January 1st, 2012 to January 1st, 2018. And the committee received both written and oral testimony, all in favor of extending the credit date. So we did refer that to this committee for recommendation to extend that credit. The testimony that we heard were from advocates of fish passage. And in essence, this is a policy of the state that we have in statute. There are two ways that we promote fish passage and the safe screening of these diversions. One of them is through a tax. It's not actually, it's a grant program funded through lottery. And it is a landowner share program. So it's a 60-40 share program. The second way that we promote the safe passage and screening of these diversions is through a tax credit. So the question I had is, do we need to have two different state-funded programs in order to promote this policy, which is making sure that fish are not going through a diversion? And I've actually seen diversions that aren't screened, and you can end up with fish in irrigation channels or ditches, and we have thousands of them actually throughout the state. Flip side is that we're spending millions of dollars on salmon recovery throughout the state, so we want to make sure that the salmon that we are recovering are not ending up in open ditches, and that they're safely diverted from their possible demise. So this is a program that I think that our committee felt was a good policy. This incentive is a small tax credit. And there are some people that do not qualify for the other program. So one of the reasons that we forwarded this is because there are irrigators and farmers that would not qualify for the other cost share program. So we wanted to make sure there wasn't an overlap of programs for this tax credit. Thus, we recommended reauthorizing it and extending it until 2018. So the second bill that I'm going to talk about is Senate Bill 320A, the reforestation tax credit. Currently, a credit is allowed against personal or corporate income tax equal to 50% of the qualified cost of reforesting underproductive commercial forest land. As introduced, Senate Bill 320 left the sunset date for the reforestation tax credit blank. The bill as amended extends the tax credit date to January 2018. The committee received both written and oral testimony on this credit. Three people testified in favor. Department of Forestry provided background information. The department remained neutral, as often is the case. One person did suggest that this credit should be a low priority because it was not well utilized. I heard the discussion about how do you get folks to utilize these tax credits. Part of it is that making sure that landowners know about these tax credits. This is a tax credit that's actually been around for a long time. We feel that it fills a niche that is not filled in any other way. It's relatively small impact, and again, it's promoting reforestation of areas that wouldn't necessarily be replanted without the incentive provided for this tax credit. The next one was Senate Bill 620 for biomass collection. Currently, a credit is allowed against corporation or personal income taxes to producers and collectors of biomass produced and used in Oregon as biofuel or to produce biofuels. Types of biomass include woody, forest-based biomass, agriculture crops, manure, yard debris, used oil, and grease. Senate Bill 620 makes two changes to the biomass producer and collector tax credit. Our committee recommended extending the sunset date to January 1st, 2019, and it changed the year in which the tax credit can be claimed from the tax year it was certified by Department of Energy to the tax year it was transferred to a biofuel producer or oilseed processor. So we felt that this was a more efficient way to deliver this tax credit. Again, our committee received both written and oral testimony, all in favor of extending the tax credit. Just as a side note, I worked on the policy in 2007 and 2009 to promote locally based biofuels, and so what this tax credit does is complement that state policy and help in-state producers of the feedstock. Also, it's the folks who are pressing the seeds, and again, this is all locally grown, Oregon-based jobs, so we wanted to make sure that we were continuing to promote that policy, and this is very supportive of the work that's happening in the agricultural sector in Oregon. Senate Bill 319A, diesel engine, you heard a little bit about it from the previous panel. This was introduced as two tax credits, the first one to create a new diesel engine tax credit. The second was to create a diesel engine retrofit and retropower tax credit. Testimony provided to the committee indicated the credit for new diesel engines were not as effective. New engine purchases that were made, what we heard was they would have been made anyway. So there was more support for the retrofit and retropower tax credit. Our committee, based on the testimony and the analysis that we did, recommended that we move Senate Bill 319 forward. However, we eliminated the new diesel engine component, and we recommended that the sunset date for the retrofit and retropower tax credit be extended to 2018. So a qualifying, as you heard, a qualifying diesel engine repower is scrapping of an old diesel engine in a non-road vehicle or piece of equipment and replacing it with a new, used, or remanufactured engine that has lower emissions. Qualifying diesel engine retrofit means to equip a diesel engine with new emission-reducing parts or technology after the manufacture of the original engine. So we felt that this was a better targeted use of the limited dollars we have. Unfortunately, we do not have the metrics to report back on what percentage of diesel emissions are being reduced through this tax credit. As you heard, it's one of a set of tools to reduce diesel emissions overall. And we felt that's an effective way to get some of these older, more polluting engines out of production. And as you can see, there's been a number of people who have taken advantage of it, not as many as we'd like. And again, questions we asked are, what are we doing to educate people about the availability of this tax credit? So I think that's something certainly that DEQ and the industry could help the state make sure folks know about the availability of this. And I think that it has merit and would like to recommend that it stays in place until 2018. I think when we come back and see, obviously, if we've gotten enough of these old, more polluting diesel engines out of use. The last tax credit that I will say that we move forward, we actually had one that we did not move forward, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Senate Bill 691, which is crop donation, or otherwise known as crop gleaning. Credit is allowed against personal or corporate income taxes for crop donations to gleaning cooperatives, food banks, or qualifying charitable organizations located in Oregon. Crops include plants or orchard stocks that produce food for human consumption and livestock animals. Senate Bill 691 extends the tax credit to 2018. The committee received testimony from the Oregon Food Bank and Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force, both in support of the credit. This, again, we felt was a good policy for the state. We're seeing, unfortunately, numbers of folks that are utilizing food banks has increased tremendously, especially the recession. There's more and more of a demand for this type of excess food that is donated to these food banks. And so we felt that this was a very small tax credit. However, a good policy consistent with the policy of the state to reduce hunger in the state. The last tax credit that we reviewed, I got to make sure I have the number right, but it was one on riparian, extends the tax credit for riparian lands removed from farm production. This was Senate Bill 690, and as you see, we did not recommend that that be reauthorized. First of all, nobody testified in support of it, so that was somewhat telling. The other is it hasn't been utilized at all, and when I talked to folks in the agricultural community, they felt that there just wasn't enough incentive there. There's also a myriad of federal incentives through NRCS and USDA that actually provide better incentive for landowners to take land out of production in riparian areas and leave that fallow. So we felt that this was an unnecessary one. It was duplicative, a federal policy that we could take off the books. And then finally, I would like to just make a few comments, if I could, about 688, and then I can go into more detail about it when we actually open up the public hearing. I handed out a chart because I'm hoping folks will take a look at that before the hearing. A couple of things about the process. Worked very closely with the co-chairs on the House side. We formed a joint tax credit committee specifically for 688. We met several times. We had 30-plus stakeholders at the table. I want to thank the Department of Energy, which you'll hear from, I'm sure, in more detail about this. But the RETC is, out of all the tax credits that we reviewed, the largest impact on the general fund. And it also is the largest or the broadest tax credit that we looked at. We felt that it needed a lot of tweaking. And the bill that we passed forward to you, we believe is more relevant for today's economic and energy needs. We also put a clear goal in the statute, because when we were looking at this tax credit, we realized that it wasn't really clear about what the intent of that was. So I won't go into much more detail since we're not officially in the public hearing, and we'll be happy to talk about that on Thursday. But I wanted to make sure that you had a chance to read this before the hearing. What this handout says is this was the major elements of the RETC that we reviewed, and as you can see, there's columns that talk about what the product is and recommendations either to eliminate, reduce, or preserve, and the rationale for each. So I was hoping that, I think that will help inform the discussion on Thursday about why we recommended that. And with that, I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. First of all, I want to just heap praise on you for the process you've gone through on this. This is, I think it's fair to say, the most thorough review we've seen from a policy committee of tax credits. You put a lot of work, your stakeholders meetings, your individual meetings. It's a very thoughtful process, and I just want to express my appreciation. I think I speak for the whole committee.
You do.
And also, when you come back on the on RETC, it would be very interesting for me to hear the discussion that I'm sure took place about the overlap between the RETC and the Energy Trust. So I just wanted to put that request out there as something that's going to be very interesting to me when you come back.
Okay. Thank you. And I would be remiss if I did not thank my staff, Melanie Stidham, who did a wonderful job at pulling information together, also rode herd on the agencies to make sure they got all their information in on time and set up all the meetings for these tax credit discussions. So I would like to thank staff for an excellent job.
Other questions for the senator? And then thank you, Senator.
Let me off easy.
Very much appreciate your hard work on this.
Thank you. And my staff can stay in case there are some questions about any of these tax credits to hear more testimony, because she was there for all those discussions.
Great.
Thank you. Good luck.
Go ahead.
I know where you're going.
I think we'll call up next Larry Scruggs to finish off our testimony on the diesel bills.
Thank you very much. Co-chairs, vice chairs, and members of the committee, my name is Larry Scruggs. I reside at 6942 North Villard Avenue in Portland, 97217, and I come to you today representing the members of Tax Fairness Oregon. House Bill 3170A and Senate Bill 319A would eliminate the sunset on tax credits for both the purchase of new diesel truck engines as well as the repowering and retrofitting of old diesel engines. These programs are intended to encourage the turnover of less efficient, more polluting diesel engines to new, more efficient, less polluting ones. Both of these programs have seen less use than expected and do not appear to be effective or necessary for two reasons. The first is that as a result of the court settlement with the EPA, all diesel engine manufacturers are required to meet strict emissions guidelines, so any new engine is necessarily more efficient than the old models. And second, the necessity of replacing broken engines and the vastly increased fuel efficiency of newer engines are far more powerful tax incentives than this tax credit. Let me give you an example based upon my experience, which is with buses, but I think can be applied to trucks and the other diesel engines. If I have a typical MCI bus with a 144-gallon fuel tank and diesel costs $4.50 per gallon and I get 5 miles per gallon, it costs me about $648 to go about 720 miles. If I install a new engine that gets me 6 miles per gallon, 1 mile per gallon increase, I get 864 miles for the same cost. Or in other words, I'm saving about $108 per tank. If a new Detroit diesel engine costs $6,000, which is the cost of one as of yesterday. I recover the cost of the new engine in 55 tanks, or for the average over-the-road bus doing 700 miles a day, I recover that cost in about 3 months. My question to you is, why do we need to subsidize this retrofit when in this case it will pay for itself within 90 days, and in many others, I'm suggesting if you get 350 miles per day on the bus or truck, it's a six-month recovery. In the most recent tax expenditure report, the Department of Environmental Quality stated in their evaluation of the new diesel engine tax credit that, and I quote, the majority of new truck owners that have applied for this credit would have purchased the truck with or without the credit, end quote. This tax credit program has run its course, demonstrated its lack of efficacy, and should be allowed to sunset. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Scruggs. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, colleagues, I think we're going to take the rest of these bills in order, going down the list. So I'm going to call up, related to Senate Bill 689, a panel of Kurt Melcher, Kitty Fast, and Bill Cluding. If they are in the room.
Co-Chair Bailey, Co-Chair Berger, for the record, my name is Sean Cleave, filling in for Ms. Fast for the Oregon Farm Bureau. Oregon Farm Bureau supports Senate Bill 689, the fish screen bill. There are a variety of pieces of legislation this session will extend tax credits specifically targeted at Oregon producers. This is one in a list of about eight bills. I won't go into the details because this is more of Ms. Fass's bailiwick, but I will just like to express the Farm Bureau's support of this piece of legislation. It's a very small investment. I believe about $80,000 is estimated from the prior biennia that was invested for these types of fish screens. And with that, I will hand that over to the Department of Fish and Wildlife for the details.
Thank you. Co-Chair Bailey, co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Melcher, Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and appreciate the opportunity to come and talk with you today about Senate Bill 689. I think the Senator did a good job of kind of giving you a high-level overview on what this tax credit bill does. I did want to also add a few things. I wanted to add the fact that these screens and fish passage devices are a critical piece of providing both improving fish population status, fish production, as well as connectivity of fish populations. And they do provide instantaneous benefits to the fish resources of the state. The fish screening program and the fish passage program, though, as reflected here, is truly voluntary. We look to work with water users, water diverters, on a voluntary basis to get them to come into our program. They truly receive no benefit from participation in the program. In fact, it's a long-term commitment on their part to maintaining these screens. And as such, as this program was developed in the early 1990s, there was numerous approaches that were felt to be critical to keeping this program on good footing. One was the tax credit, which is a modest tax credit. One, of course, was the cost share program. And I did want to add to that that on all recreational fishing licenses in the state, there's a 75-cent surcharge on every license purchased that goes in directly into this fish screening subaccount to also help with cost share. So it's kind of a diversified funding approach to putting these screens on the ground, if you will, as well as other passage devices, provide benefits really for the public's resource for the fish. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair, and there are far more details we could get into if you'd like.
Commissioner Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I was struck by your statement that those who put these devices in, say, an agricultural loose derive no benefit. Is there a benefit to having the fish going through their systems? It seems to me that there would be a benefit in preventing the fish from going where you really don't want fish.
Sure. Co-Chair Bailey, Representative Berger, that you're absolutely correct. And what I was referring to is that when they install a fish screen on a diversion, and we'll just take a screen as the example, their operation doesn't become any more efficient. The screen is really for the public's benefit. It's to prevent the fish from being diverted into an environment that's not conducive to fish, i.e. an irrigation ditch, pump, whatever the case may be. So the benefit in installing the screen is truly in terms of the public's benefit in that it benefits our fish resources.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Cluding.
Thank you, co-chair, co-vice chairs, committee for the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. I'd like to speak briefly first on Senate Bill 620, the biomass bill. Again, I'll state this is one area that where we could create jobs in this state, but we're going to need a little help to get this thing going. And on Senate Bill 689, I have here this issue Rural Light magazine put out, Consumer Power, which I am a member. This is how important this fish issue is. Since 1978, people in the Northwest have spent $12 billion on fish, saving fish. 15% to 30% of every monthly household and business power bill goes in the Northwest, goes to saving fish. With a court decision that's due out of the federal courts this month, it's estimated that we will be spending, in addition to this, $1 billion extra dollars each year to save fish. Everybody's power bill in the Northwest is going to go up 8.5% to save fish. Granted, we have to save these fish. There's many things we could do to help with this fish issue, and fish screens are needed. Where this water is diverted, it helps the farmers do their crops to feed this nation. But we've got to save these fish. This year, it's estimated there'll be 100 million smolts come down the Columbia River heading toward Astoria. 100 million. Just above Astoria, we have a flock of fish-eating birds numbering 23,000, two different species, estimated that they will eat 30 million smolts. Now, that's kind of off the subject, but once we get them past the screens, we've got to get them past these birds. There's things we could do. We could apply for grants from NOAA, U.S. Department of Interior, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We have to look at applying to these grants, but right now we need these fish screens in place. We've got to get them past the screens. Thank you, and I'll answer any questions. These facts came right out of this magazine today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cluding. Any other questions for this panel? Gentlemen, thank you. Call up Link Cannon, Senate Bill 320.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Link Cannon with the Oregon Forest Industries Council. I'm passing around some testimony from Mr. Jake Gibbs, who I am not, with the Lone Rock Timber Company, I believe. Mr. Gibbs has appeared before you previously. This is on the reforestation tax credit bill, which Senator Dingfelder covered, I think, Senate Bill 320. You've heard previous testimony on the House version of this, 3169, and so you've got Mr. Gibbs' testimony, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer it, or I'm at your disposal.
Questions for Mr. Cannon? Colleagues, this is very similar to the bill we heard earlier. Yes, Co-Chair Berger.
Mr. Cannon, did you follow up on my suggestion to put your little video on the web somewhere?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Berger, Co-Chair Berger, I've had this discussion with Chris. The problem is it's currently packaged as a PowerPoint presentation with an attached sound file. We're looking at that. I think one of the other things we're considering before we do that is looking at Representative Bence's idea of putting showing the growth and accumulation of biomass on federal forest as well. So it'll be a ways down the road, but we do have that presentation functional in a PowerPoint presentation right now, but we can't put it on YouTube.
Mr. I would encourage you to do so, so that I can send it to everyone I know, because it was a very powerful thing. And whatever the technical problems are, and I don't understand them exactly, I would really like to show that to a lot of people who don't believe what Mr. Clutien has been saying and others about the significant impact of forest policy in this state.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you again for that presentation. We will be showing it to our Republican Senate caucus, and I would suggest that every caucus in the assembly take the few minutes and tee that up. And I understand that we can do that, Chris. You can.
We just got the file this morning that edits down into a movie file.
Oh, so we'll get it into a movie file?
Yeah. I need to kind of double check some things, but I think we're there.
Yeah, we are going to do that on our side.
Get a film credit for it now.
Excellent suggestion, Senator. In a capital chock full of smart technical people, I'm sure you can find somebody to turn a new movie file. Oh, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the background paragraph in the testimony that you passed around from Mr. Gibbs. And I'm just trying to make certain I understand. It says here that the Forest Practices Act requires reforestation after harvest. If I understand the rest of the paragraph, I think what it says is that this credit really isn't for that. It's for foresting areas that are not currently in forests. Have I understood that correctly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, Senator Telfer and I were wondering if Chris is going to be applying for a film credit based on his...
too late.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And on Senate Bill 620, we'll call it Thomas Endicott, Katie Fast, Bob Repine. Not seeing Katie Fast, let's go ahead and call up Kent Madison on this panel. Whoever wants to begin.
Okay. Co-Chair Bailey, Co-Chair Berger, members of the committee. I'm Thomas Endicott. I'm VP of Business Development at Willamette Biomass Processors. We are Oregon's largest oilseed processor located in Rickreal, Oregon. We contract with farmers throughout Oregon for the production of soybeans, canola, and camelina. We extract the oil in our plant, and we send that oil to biodiesel production at one of two biodiesel plants here in the state. I'd like to encourage members of the committee to support this bill and keep the Oregon oilseed and biofuels industries moving forward. You may recall that this tax credit was a part of a package in 2007. Senator Dingfelder just mentioned to try to bolster and encourage a biofuels industry here in the state, a Oregon-grown biofuels industry. The credit was designed to give the biomass industry a 6-year runway to get things off the ground, to achieve adequate capacity and scale, and to justify the value of new products that were not in the market before, in particular these vegetable oil for biofuel and oilseed meal for livestock feed. For a number of different reasons, which I'm happy to talk about later, the farmers and processors have not moved as quickly as we thought would happen, and so we're here to ask for a little more runway to get this program off the ground and to create some stability and competitiveness for these new products. This is a very important incentive for farmers, and I passed out three different testimony. One is mine. One is from Ryan Malpas, Malpas Family Farms down, I believe, in Representative Barnhart's area, Coburg farming down there. And then another grower, John McElloran, out in Central Oregon corridor. And if you look at those testimonies, they both mentioned that this incentive is very important because they're taking risks on producing a crop that they're not familiar with. And we're a little different than woody biomass, which is out there in the forest. It's harvested and moved to markets. Our cycles are at least 6 months long, and these growers take several seasons, several years to learn the appropriate crop that works on their ground, the agronomics behind that, and then also for the markets to be developed for those products. I'll also note that to date, the oilseed component of this program has been very modest, $180,000 in tax credits in 2010, which was 3% of the total biomass tax credit program. So it's very important to these growers, but very small to date. I also obviously want to make the point that this credit is an investment in Oregon agriculture and Oregon business. Willamette Biomass Processors has been crushing since late 2008. We invested $2.5 million in a new facility in Rickreal. We took advantage of a small business energy tax credit, and beyond that, the company is privately financed. We crush up to 120 tons of seed per day. We can produce between 2,000 and 6,000 gallons of vegetable oil each day, depending on the type of seed we're pressing. We created 10 full-time positions with the company that include healthcare benefits and several part-time positions. And I think it's important to note 7 of those 10 full-time positions were unemployed before they came to work for us. So this has been a very good situation for Polk County and for the state of Oregon. The vegetable oil that becomes biofuel and the oilseed meal that becomes livestock feed also displace products that would otherwise be imported into the state. As you know, Oregon has no petroleum refining. We have no oil wells here. Any biofuel that's produced here, the virgin oil product and the biodiesel itself, is money that stays here in the economy. Likewise, when we crush oil seeds, 75% of the weight of that seed becomes livestock feed, the other 25% oil. Oregon is a huge importer of canola meal and soybean meal for dairies, and the material that we produce here, again, keeps that money in the Oregon economy as opposed to being exported out of the Oregon economy. Also, I'm sure you're aware, as a part of that biofuels package in 2007 and 2009, Oregon now has a 5% biodiesel requirement statewide as of April 1st. That creates a market for about 40 million gallons of pure biodiesel per year. And to date, I think we have about 16 million gallons of capacity. Those biodiesel plants bring in feedstock from wherever they can get it. Our goal and the goal of the farmers in the state is to produce this feedstock for those plants and, again, continue to intensify the local economic opportunities here. I think I've covered most of the points. I will just mention there are a couple technical fixes, which Senator Dingfelder mentioned, and those are important so that growers can claim the tax credit in the year that they produce the crop. I think that's taken care of in the bill. Also, I know you realize that there's a lot of similarity to House Bill 2936 that I think you heard last week. Obviously, we'd be in support of that as well. And in summary, I'd just like to say I think this program has worked well for the growers. It just hasn't been a long enough period of time to get this industry off the ground, and we'd like for a little more time and encourage your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Repine.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, I am Bob Repine, Acting Director for the Department of Energy. I just want to add the agency's response to Senate Bill 620. As you know, the agency has been managing now the bio collector credit for since 2010. 2009 it was given to us. 2010 was our first year. In the letter I've presented to the you and the chairs, we talk about the fact that the we do manage that program. We understand the difficulty that the ag industry is having with the use of the credits. It's really a timing issue for them because of the fact that much of the harvesting is done, or the collection of this material is done toward the end of the year. If the material is not processed, it then goes into the following year, where we certify the credit, and then all of a sudden they've now have to take that tax credit for that year. So it has caused some disadvantage for this industry. And so we believe the way the program manages today with us, if this was to be enacted by the legislature, we don't see any problems with adjusting to accommodate that to make sure it's more timely for those credits to be awarded to them. And then the extension is also, you know, to the pleasure of the committee, but we think in this particular industry it has needs a little more ramp-up time. I think historically Oregon has been doing biomass collection in the woods for a very long period of time, but this is a new kind of emerging industry that we're trying to grow and add to, as the prior speaker, to add to the fuel stocks for conversion for other than fossil fuels, and I think that's a worthy effort by the state of Oregon, so extending it would be helpful. I also present to you, Mr. Chair and committee members, our responses to the questions that you ask. And if you remember, this is the questions that have been enhanced a little bit with a series of other questions, I think, formulated by this group. So we responded to all of those questions once again. I wanted to point out, and this is more in the larger context of the biomass collection credit, on item number 8, where we respond to how could this program be more effective or efficient, one of the things we still would ask the committee to consider is currently the way the credits in not this instance for this product, but for other materials, is collected by a wet or a green weight base on the credit value. We think that it would be more appropriate to go to a dry weight credit as opposed to the wet. It's really much more the industry. What the industry does, they collect money or they pay for their product based on dry weight fees, not on wet. And so, and then the wet fee, quite frankly, allows potentially people to hedge on that a little bit, because you can, you know, get a load of material and hose it down with something, and all of a sudden it weighs a little bit more and you get a little bit more money for it. So if you convert to the dry, you can eliminate some of that gaming potential that could be at risk with the program. And then the other thing we would ask that you might consider, again, in the biomass general discussion, is maybe the elimination or termination of yard debris. There's other processes and ways that material is handled. There's tipping fees that are associated with it generally, and that material is delivered to a place. And we don't think that yard debris really needs to be part of this structure anymore, because there's other financial tools that are available today. I also concluded in the documents that I share with you, and I'm sure many of you have seen this before, but because we appear on the discussion of credits, and particularly the biomass credits, in a variety of committees, we've prepared a 4-page document that was written by Matt Krumenauer, our technical person in our office, just kind of giving you the highlights of the program as we've managed it through 2010. It talks about where the credits were taken, what the amounts were, as the prior witness testified. You'll notice on page 3, it talks about the utilization of the credits, and on the third item down is the oilseed crops, which represented approximately $180,000 worth of credits last year. The takeaway from this I would like to share with you is in the paragraph just above that chart on page 3, is that we issued 22% of the tax credits for biomass related activities, and the materials were shipped out of Oregon. So my question is, for the purpose of a tax credit program, would we rather keep the tax credit for materials that are being consumed or used in the state of Oregon, not shipped out to Washington or California? And so that's something you also might want to consider when you look at the biomass tax credit piece of legislation. And then the final one-pager that's on the back end is really an update from the University of Oregon. They are conducting a impact study for us on a series of questions that are more job-related. I think this committee and other committees have been very interested in this topic, and so we're trying to collect more data. The university is in charge of that collection of that material, and as you'll see by the letter, they're in the process of getting it. They believe they'll have the report in final form by June, but we're hoping to get a pre-look at that before the end of this month. And if we believe that the information would be valuable to this committee and other committees regarding jobs related to the credits, we'll make that information available to you. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I conclude my comments. I'll take any questions you might have.
Commissioner Burdick.
Thank you. Could you elaborate on the use of or the export of biomass out of state, how prevalent it is, how it works, and how how we could tailor that credit down.
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, committee members, it really is just a function of pretty much in the woody biomass collection. It's somebody who's collecting materials generally near border states, so it would be probably prevalent to going to Washington or California. Materials are collected for other facilities in those states, and so they collect the material here. They collect the credit for collecting it here, but then they use it, end use of the material is used in facilities for biomass burning, generally for electric conversion in another state. And so there's probably a way to write that in a way that the credit has to be, material has to be collected here and used in the state of Oregon in order to be eligible for that credit.
Okay, Mr. Chair, follow up. So the effect of it basically is that the taxpayers are subsidizing lower rates for out of state. Is that?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, committee members, that's hard for us to make a determination because we don't know what they're getting paid for that material when they take it to that facilities. One could argue that the credits that are being collected here are for the purpose of those jobs that are on the ground collecting the materials, but the part that we struggle with is the material isn't being used for generation of power in the state of Oregon or other biofuel activities. So the question is that do you want to award a credit for that purpose, or do you want to make sure it's credit that's awarded for use for materials collected in this state and used in this state? It's really more of a fundamental question.
Thank you for raising that point.
And Director Repine, did the considerations of additional efficiencies within the mechanism of the tax credit, such as the green weight to dry weight, did that come up in the policy committees?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, we've made that document available, and that statement appears in earlier documents that we've shared with committees as well. So, again, we think it's worthy of consideration. It's generally the industry is reimbursed by the end user on a dry basis, and so it just seems peculiar that we're using a wet or green criteria for our materials.
Mr. Madsen.
Representatives, co-chairs, senators, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today. I came here to testify on Senate Bill 620, and after sitting in the crowd listening to all the other testimonies, I'm going to actually testify on all the bills because they all do affect me. And I'm Kent Madison. I'm a third-generation farmer out of the Hermiston area. I have a 17,500-acre irrigated farm that pumps out of the Columbia River and out of other shallow wells and other things, other water sources. The fourth generation assured me that they were home doing what's supposed to be going on today, so I'm assuming that that's gone. But on Senate Bill 620, to start with, it's a great bill. I see all these tax credits as really it's a public-private partnership. It's basically saying, I see it anyway as a private individual, the public has said to me that if you want to take the risk to develop a new industry, then and that industry is profitable, then we as the public will help alleviate some of that risk by allowing you a tax credit if you should be profitable. Remember, the tax credit is only there if we're profitable at what we're doing, if we have a tax liability. And so it's been a great program from that. So as an example on 620, it was used basically to encourage oilseed production to stay in Oregon. I do raise canola. I've been doing that since about 1990 when I developed a lot of my farmer irrigated production. Canola is, if you're not aware, is basically rapeseed that has been produced through the Canadian government in the early 70s to breed the pericic acid out of it, and that's where the word canola comes from. It's Canada oil. That's where the word canola comes from. And it's so that product then is now fit for human consumption. So we can produce canola to provide oil for our own internal engines, or we can use that same oil to produce fuel for our diesel engines. In 06, I started developing a biodiesel facility where I would grow and crush canola oil in my own facility, produce biodiesel. And, in fact, Representative Dingfelter at the time, she was Representative Dingfelter, came there and toured our facility in the summer when we were building that, and we had quite a lengthy discussion about Oregon's renewable fuel standard and some of the incentives that we thought we might need to help encourage the production of these kind of facilities. And then so we continue to build the facility. The Betsy credit program that the department issues, actually the original Betsy credit example listed my equipment and my farm as the example on how to do those Betsy credits. So we've taken advantage of those processes too. And so those are all great things. They've been there. They've helped encourage the production of these facilities. I've invested about $1.2 million of my own capital in the process of building these facilities. I now produce oil. We do not produce biodiesel at our facility because it's more cost-effective to sell our raw oil to Sequential Pacific here in Salem. They produce biodiesel specifically for the City of Portland's Water Bureau fleet under the leadership of Randy Leonard. So they can run anywhere from a B100 to a, I guess it's probably a B99.9 blend on down in their equipment there for the biodiesel or for the Water Bureau fleet. That's been a very good partnership with the City of Portland on providing those products. The one thing that we need to understand about canola production is it's basically a three-year crop production. Canola has a disease called blackleg, and if you raise it every year in the same field, you'll end up getting a disease that eliminates a lot of its production capabilities. So the Oregon Department of Agriculture encourages those rotations to be 3 years or longer. So we're looking at a tax credit that's in its fifth year and on a crop that you can only raise every 3 years. So really we haven't even had 2 years worth of rotations theoretically go through on this crop yet. So it's been a slow crop for agriculture to adopt because to adopt it knowing that the tax credit's going to expire before you can even get your second crop in, it's not a real incentive there to do it. I applaud you in the process of extending this out. At least give a total of 12 years for the agricultural community to have adopted this technology over a four-year crop or four rotations over that 12 years because of this three-year crop rotation. So that's a very good part of the bill. The one thing about canola, it's a great low-water crop, and it's a great rotational crop.
Unfortunately, we are close to running out of time in committee. I have one more panel to get to, so if you could summarize your comments, that would be great.
I guess 620 is a great bill. Continue to pass it through like it is. It's being used in the industry like it should be, and it needs just more time. So I think your bill's great like it is. I would like to talk about Senate Bill 2520, the crop donation bill. I didn't even know that existed. There in the third generation, is a House Bill 2520.
Which is, I believe, colleagues before us, Senate Bill 691.
691, that's correct. Okay, I was looking at your things here. But again, I didn't even know that existed. So here I'm an agriculture producer. I have thousands of acres of commodities that people could glean off of. I've never once had society come out and say, I want to follow your potato digger and pick potatoes up. And if they wanted to, I wouldn't need a tax credit to let them do it. They could just do it, but I've never seen anyone do it. But meanwhile, we donate directly to the Oregon Food Bank. We donate directly to Bushels for Betsy. We donate directly to the Farmers Ending Hunger Program. And I was totally unaware of this deal. So I think a lot of our tax credit problem is we don't have somebody out there going to production agriculture and saying, here's our list of incentives that we have as Oregonians, and here's how it could apply to you, and here's the benefit it could have to you. I think it's still a great bill, but I didn't know it was there. I'd like to testify on Senate Bill 319. Again, didn't have a clue it was there. I've heard some rumors about diesel emissions and retrofit engines. I have lots of diesel engines on my farm. We burn about 100,000 gallons of diesel emissions a year. We sequester about 2.5 million gallons of diesel equivalent carbon in our farming process, so we're definitely carbon positive. Didn't have a clue this program was there. Again, no one showed up at my doorstep saying, gee, you have older diesel engines that could be retrofitted through this program, and here's the incentive, and here's how it goes.
Thank you. Do you have concluding remarks?
Okay. I support all your bills. Reading through them all, they all look like a great idea. I see our biggest problem is the communication side of it. We don't have individuals out there going to the private sector saying, here's what you can do, here's the benefits for you.
Great. Thank you very much, Sean. Appreciate the testimony. And finally, we'd like to call up Jody Weiser and Sean Cleave on 691.
Co-Chair Bailey, Co-Chair Berger, for the record again, my name is Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau in support of Senate Bill 691. We do have a variety of producers that do participate in the program. Actually, one is just to the east here. He provides gleaning services for peaches, which provide fresh fruit to the food bank. We see this as an important role and an incentive that would otherwise not be there for all producers in Oregon. And I agree with the previous speaker that the Farm Bureau and other advocacy groups could do a better job of promoting these types of incentives to our producers so that fresh fruit and vegetables are available to the food bank. And with that, I will close my testimony and open up to any questions you may have.
Thank you.
And I'm Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon, and you won't be surprised to hear that we think that this bill is not necessary. In 1977, when it was designed, it was important because people weren't donating, and there weren't many incentives at the federal level to encourage that. But in 2008, the federal government made available to any business person benefits that had been available only to C corporations. And at this point in time, if you have a crop that's marginal, that, you know, should I bother to harvest it or not, you can make more money by using what's available on the federal code, which passes through to the state, than you would if you harvested the crop and sold it. Because you can get, besides deducting the cost of growing every crop you grow, whether you harvest it or not, you also could get up to double that cost in subtraction from income. And because that incentive is so strong, our tax credit is no longer necessary. It may be that the Farm Bureau needs to do a better job of advertising the availability of it, but the benefits are definitely there. This is a tax credit you can give up without having any heart pain, even though it is about feeding hungry people. But the benefits are there for farmers, for canners, for grocery stores, for restaurants, anybody that donates food to the food bank or similar organizations. Thank you.
Thank you both. Questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, colleagues, thank you. With that, I will close the public hearings on Senate Bill 689, Senate Bill 320, Senate Bill 620, Senate Bill 319, Senate Bill 691, and House Bill 3170A. And we will adjourn the committee, Joint Committee on Tax Credits. We will adjourn the committee, Joint Committee on Tax Credits.